Good evening, folks, and welcome to the latest edition of the Trinity Thames podcast. This one's called Just Another Saturday, because that's what yesterday was for us. Just another Saturday, a routine game of football, a routine victory. That's what the season's turned into now. A series of routines, a series of games where we show up with our professional heads on, we get the job done, we put three more points on the board and take another step towards the league title. That doesn't mean that it wasn't impressive to watch. My name is James Forrest, and I'm joined here by my colleagues Eric Knott from Reed Celtic and Joe McHugh from Video Cells. So I'm going to start with Eric. What did you think of yesterday? How did you think it went?
As you put it, James, I think it was pretty much routine. We came up with a pretty set game plan. It worked well for us. Have to say, Calmac was very, very, very good, solid performance from him. Nice to see him back, kind of with those kind of that trickery with the feet. You know, that was lovely, a little bit of trickery in the run up to the goal, and really good goal the way he took it. So. And it was, you know, overall performance by Calmac, and he was unlucky not to have a second, I think, was pretty good. What was very positive out of the game, though, was the overall general play. I mean, Dundee United really didn't get into it. It was a bit, I mean, I remember the last time we played them at home, they got into the game towards the end. This time around, they didn't seem to appear to get into it too much. So I think it was well controlled. The goals then really well taken. Jota, I mean, that was just pure Jota, absolutely pure Jota. It was great to watch, and you know, it's really it's good to know that having him in that capacity, you know, he's really hit the ground running. You know, we all talked at the start where we said that we thought he might have had a bit of, you know, bedding in time, but when he went onto the field to play against Motherwell, he got his first goal. Obviously, he didn't get much opportunity to make a great impact on Wednesday night, but like today, or yesterday, should I say, he had a very good impact. And obviously, he had a very good impact in the Dundee game there a couple of weeks back too, you know. So from the get-go, he's really hit the ground running. And if this is what his level is at to start with, only better. It augurs very well for the rest of the season. Only better is to come, you know. So, I was really pleased with his performance, really pleased with his goal. And that was some skid on the knees all the way across to the corner flag after he scored when he was celebrating. He had a very good, solid game again yesterday. Adam Ida, I mean, a couple of weeks back, we had the discussion, you know, this guy was going to come good. He was going to start banging in goals. I mean, for all the naysayers out there now, you know, saying this guy was wasting 9 million quid, I think you can eat your words now. It's time for a bit of humble pie, because Adam Ida scored a peach of a goal yesterday to round it off for the 3-0 win. So I was really pleased for him again, and I'm really pleased he's proven the naysayers wrong. So yeah, overall, really solid day at the office, really good performance. And as you said, routine, just another Saturday, definitely.
I mean, this is what it is now. Rodgers, between Andrew and Rodgers, they've built a machine that just wins games. It happens so frequently that it feels like a routine. You go expecting to see goals, you go expecting to see wins. I did a piece last night on the stats. We are averaging 3 goals a game, which is mental, which is absolutely insane. 3 goals a game in the league. And so yesterday just felt like another one of those days. It just felt like you wait for the breakthrough. Once the breakthrough comes, the team doesn't look back. But you mentioned Callum. I'm glad you mentioned Callum, because I thought he was exceptional yesterday. The piece I did on him last night was about the sort of lesser seen side of Callum McGregor. Because everybody, you know, he's one of those players that can kind of disappear out of the background because he does that really unsexy job of marshalling the midfield, you know, and protecting the defence. But when McGregor's got the ball at his feet and he decides to run with the ball and he decides to, like, bring the more adventurous side of his game out, I don't think there's a player in Scotland who's anywhere near as good as him. His technical skills are tremendous, and yesterday I just thought he was on another level. Not just his goal, the one he almost scored as well. Just everything about his play was brilliant. I really wish we would push him further up the pitch, because I love watching the guy doing that stuff. Love watching it.
And that was something Brendan did in his early days, wasn't it? I mean, he played him much further up the pitch in his early days, and he was very effective when he did that and when he played in that role. So obviously, I know it's a bit of a different role for him now, but you know, and the captaincy and the responsibility with what he has to do. But you know, we saw flashes of the old Cavanagh yesterday. You know, and that you, I mean, you can't flaw his footwork. He's really good on the ball. His close control is on his day second to none. And you have to say again, yesterday was one of those days where his close control was really, really good.
What about yourself, Joe? What did you think yesterday?
First of all, a bit of a call out for last week. Last week was an epic podcast. We managed to add 200 subscribers to it. You don't do that often in 90 minutes. So thanks to everyone that subscribed. Hopefully this week is of a good standard. We'll not always hit the peaks of last week. Lots of feedback. I even get a suggestion it was a Cheshire cat. That doesn't come along too often. So, sorry, James, if you're having a drink there. The suggestion of me being a Cheshire cat.
There were no gloomy faces last week at all, except across the city. Sure. They were all gloomy faces.
So, to everyone that came along last week, hope you enjoyed it. Hope you're going to enjoy this week. Share, like, subscribe, all that sort of stuff, please do. And we're not too far away from 1,000. But that's the commercial stuff out the road. There's possibly a decent case for Callum McGregor and Arne Engels switching position. Particularly, there's so much folk. If you've got a downer in Callum McGregor, it's in Europe. But most Celtic players don't hit their domestic levels in Europe. Engels seems to have the physicality. He's not Victor Wanyama, but he looks like he could be a closer match to being a defensive midfielder. It's maybe too early to put Wanyama was in there very early. He joined Celtic at a young age, but you still got to remember Engels is the youngest player in the Celtic squad. He's 21, he could take on that. Well, we've now defined it as the McGregor role. It's not the holding midfielder, it's the McGregor role. Generally, as players get older, they move back, but there might be something there for Callum McGregor to be moved a bit forward. It was great to see him scoring a goal from inside the box. We're tired of that. The goals from outside the box have all been good, but you really struggle to pick a fault with yesterday's performance. Dundee United offered very little. Nick Walsh offered a lot more resistance than Dundee United. A horrendous performance. A few years ago, an uncle of mine described it as the disadvantage rule, and that sums it up perfectly. When McCowan was filled, the ball was played through to McGregor, ready to burst through, past the halfway line, options opening up. We know what Nick Walsh was going to do, pull it back for the free kick, and there was a couple of instances like that. They're not major ones, they're not headlines, but it's very annoying, and that's the standard of refereeing that we've got in Scotland. We've had Hugh Dallas is a guru. There was no greater pupil than Willie Collum, and now we've got a generation of referees that think Willie Collum's the way to referee matches, so they've got to be the star of the show. They're desperate for attention, and that was the only downside in yesterday's performance. Like Eric, delighted to see Adam Ida score. That was a fantastic goal. I think there's always going to be people going to look down their noses, certainly Scottish players and possibly Irish players as well. And we paid too much for Adam Ida. That's down to our chief executive and his complete lack of negotiating skills. But Adam Ida is a damn good forward. Played regularly, he'll be over 20 a season, and he'll come up with some big goals as well. Yeah. And he'll force some guys into big own goals. So there's not much that we can... He can't complain at all about Adam Ida. He was just arriving at the club this time last year. He bailed us out with goals at Firth Park and Easter Road. Good. The season could have been buried if it hadn't been for those goals. He came up with them. So I think folk are just very reactionary these days. There's got to be somebody or something that they're complaining about. Kyogo's lack of goals away from home. That was a running theme.
It was.
The strikers maybe don't score as much, but the problem there is we've got two high-scoring wingers and we've got quite a few guys coming through from midfield that score goals as well. McCowan's got a good goal return. McGregor's pushing towards double figures. Engels has scored a few, most of them penalties, but as we know, you've still got to score them. and he stepped up for a few big wins recently. And he failed against Young Boys Bern, but he had the minerals to step up for the next penalty, so that sort of gets that one out the road. So very little to complain about yesterday. It was good squad rotation. Maeda wasn't at his best yesterday on the left wing, but he's forgiven for that. Johnny Kenny looks as if he's going to be one of these very, very unlucky guys. He was almost at the end of a cutback. It might be the case of trying too hard. I'm not quite sure that phrase, trying too hard, but perhaps there could be a day that he pops two or three in coming off the bench. He's putting in the effort. I don't think it's through choice that he's involved. I think St Mirren or somewhere down in England was a preferred option for Kenny. That didn't happen because of the striker, so we've got him. He's getting some decent game time, and he might be an option for next season, or they might decide that move him on. You're just a little bit short, but he's going to get a chance, and that's something that not many of the younger players, whether that's coming through the ranks or signed from elsewhere, have been given. So, it was a very decent performance yesterday. It could have been tricky in between the two Bayern games. Playing Wednesday, Tuesday isn't easy, but having watched Bayern against Leverkusen, they had a far tougher game. They had a bit backs to the wall. Bayern have had two tough away games, Celtic and Leverkusen. We had a difficult, but I think we probably took some positives from the Bayern home match. It was more than a training exercise, but it didn't stretch us. There didn't appear to be any injuries. Nobody was going the extra mile. It was all fairly routine, as you said, just another Saturday. So all good on that one. And it's on to Munich on Tuesday for something completely different.
Talking about Adam Ida, talking about McGregor, by the time this airs tonight, my latest article is going to be up. And I think it's going to cause a bit of controversy. It's about Greg Taylor. And it poses a question about why we are still playing Greg Taylor when the club policy, if you believe the club, is that any player who is not committed to the club doesn't get games. He's out of contract in a matter of months and he still plays. I hear today that the West Ham sites are saying that Daniel Cummings signed a deal with them. That explains why Daniel Cummings hasn't been seen since Aston Villa. Not even on the bench. The same happened with Rocco last season. The same happened with Daniel Kelly. Brendan has got a very clear policy that we don't select players who are not committed. And I think it's time that Greg Taylor made his mind up or moved on. It's not doing him any good. It's not doing the club any good. But I thought that Schlupp's performance yesterday was sufficiently good that he should be in contention for playing in Germany. What do you guys think of that? Joe first.
There's no black and white club policy. In an ideal world, you'd have players moved on. Nobody should be around for the final season of their contract. They should either be...
So you're trying to say that Kyogo was only sold because we got 10 million for him, because the money
100%.
Was right. Well, that may be what you were trying to say.
As soon as their check wave, Celtic will jump at it. So, what David Turnbull was playing last season and was sold in January. So, there's no black white. And Schlupp has got the same commitment to Celtic as Greg Taylor. He signed up to end the season. But on the football grounds, there's certainly a strong case to be playing Schlupp. Tuesday against Bayern might be too early for him, but The great man himself, Brendan Rodgers, he let slip when he was defending Greg Taylor that not everyone at Celtic is Champions League level. So it'd be a bit of a risk playing Schlupp. But again, I was thinking about this one. It's a situation, it's a position that has been messed up badly this season.
Yeah, of course it has.
There should have been a permanent...
Short-term thinking. Too much short-term thinking at left back.
There should have been a permanent signing in the summer instead of Alec Valley. Valley did pretty well. He played away to Atalanta. Celtic got a clean sheet against a team doing well in Serie A. Valley showed signs of promise, but I don't think it was ever going to be a permanent move. Rodgers wasn't going to play him ahead of Taylor. Got to try and keep Taylor sweet, all these sort of things. And then at the start of January, I'm sure Schluck could have been bought from Crystal Palace, could be taken in on loan at that point. If he'd been brought in then, he could have played in all, he could have been available for all the domestic matches, and it'd be match ready if he'd 6 or 7 games behind him, alternate with Taylor playing against Young Boys, Taylor playing against Aston Villa, Schluck playing the other matches, then we'd have two decent options there. And I think in that case, Schluck would get it. But Schluck is on the same commitment as Taylor. So I wouldn't point that one at Greg Taylor. It's an awkward one of our own creation. We've known for long enough. I don't think there was ever any serious attempt to bring in Kieran Tierney. The board have got a competent left-back in Greg Taylor. They weren't going to throw 2 or 3 million at West Ham and get Tierney in. They let the situation simmer, and that meant that they had to rush in Schlupp on deadline day. Luckily, it looks as if we've come up with a good player, time-served Premiership player that's ready to slot in, and he's very similar to Taylor. Anytime you look at the pitch, you're far more likely to see him in midfield than playing at left back. So, and again, with Bernardo out for 4 or 5 weeks, we are a little bit short of midfielders. We've got 4 midfielders. I think Schlupp could see some playing time as a midfielder while Taylor's continuing at left back. But he's been with us for a fortnight. He looks the part. He's a viable option, and it'll be an interesting call when we get the team sheet on Tuesday night. So that's my Taylor v. Schlupp take. Over to you, Eric.
It's funny you should actually say about Paolo Bernardo, because we were talking about that on the Sports Bus yesterday. You lose a top player like that, and there should be a bit of despondency around, but it was like, we'll cope, you know. It's only the league games left. We'll cope. We're 13 points clear, so who cares? I think it's a tribute to how well people like Luke McCown have done when they've came in, that you think to yourself, well, you know, it's only a few weeks. We'll do that. We can handle it. We'll be all right with them.
Four's a bit short for midfielders. And again, there should be somebody coming in from the B team that should be on the bench yesterday to get a bit of a look in, but clearly there's no one there. But Eric, over to you.
With regard to Greg Taylor, I mean, I read an article there last week about, Greg Taylor's seen off everybody in terms of the challenges that have come his way as left back for Celtic. And it's a fair point, he has. But you see, the problem is now that he's in the knowledge now that Kieran Tierney is coming in at the end of this season. He's very much in the knowledge that if Kieran Tierney comes in, if he stays at the club, he's going to be, there's no two ways about it, playing second fiddle to Kieran. He's going to be playing second fiddle to Kieran Tierney. So you got to ask the question, what's his mindset at the moment? Is his mindset looking elsewhere? We've heard about the Dinamo Zagreb interest in him. That's a step backwards as far as I'm concerned. I've always considered that Greg Taylor is he's a very good Scottish Premiership level player. I'm not so sure about, he was found out in the Champions League on Wednesday night there, and he was turned inside out by Michael Olise. So it's at that level that he gets found out, but he's actually been solid for we're coming up on 6 years now that he's been in the left-back position for us, and he has seen off any challengers up to this point. However, the next challenger, as Joe pointed out, we have Schlupp to the end of the season, so Schlupp is the same level of commitment as he has, but the next challenger is Kieran Tierney. So he's probably sizing up his options. He's probably in the mindset that I'm going to be second fiddle, and I don't want to be second fiddle because I've had 6 years of larding it in that position pretty much for Celtic. So, but this goes back to the board and the left back position since Kieran Tierney left. This has been something that has been ongoing for 6 years. And the problem is now that that's fine. If they look, I'm taking for granted that Taylor's not going to stay. He's not going to sign a new deal, and he's going to find a new club by the end of, you know, before the end of the season, or he's going to be at a new club next season, like, as far as I'm concerned, you know. So then you have the situation where Kieran Tierney is the only available fullback. So that means in the summer, priority, and we know the priorities are never met when it comes to the squad and have never been met in the left back position anyway, that's for sure. So priorities aren't going to be met, but the priority should be that we should be getting in a backup for Kieran Tierney. The question, or the big question we'll be asking here, is will we get in a left back? Because we haven't got one in.
Well, we need one. I mean, we need one. That's basically the answer.
Because we also know from Kieran Tierney's time at Arsenal how injury prone he is as a player. So we have to. It is imperative now that we have a backup in place for Greg Taylor, or not for Greg Taylor, for Kieran Tierney, should I say?
This is where the Taylor thing scares the living daylights out of me.
Yeah.
If Taylor decides to look at this from a point of view of, or if the club convinces Taylor to look at this from the point of view of, hang around because you never know, you might be needed a lot, right? We're stuck with Greg Taylor again for another year. And it's another one of these questions just to, why aren't we more ambitious? Why? Is this not something that we should have grabbed by the horns like 2 years ago?
Yeah, but it's also
I don't mind Greg Taylor as a player. I've got a lot of admiration for the fact that we've seen so many players to replace Taylor, and Taylor's outlasted all of them. That takes a certain amount of discipline and professionalism and the ability to look through it and ignore all the white noise and just do the job. That's a proper professional. And I wish the guy nothing but well. But just from a cold-blooded, harsh meritocracy perspective, we should have been looking to do better than this a long time ago. Absolutely, like, properly do better than this. And the Tierney upgrade is a fantastic upgrade if Kieran stays fit. But the idea that we should be looking to keep Taylor at the club for another X number of years as a backup just fills me with despair. It really does. It really does.
His mentality is not going to be right anyway. I mean, his mentality is going to be like, I mean, I'm only here to be a backup to Kieran Tierney. And if Kieran Tierney gets injured, I step in. You know, he's still losing that status as the first pick. And that has to be playing on his mind. And that has to be what forms his decision for the future. So I don't see it ending well anyway. I mean, I've already kind of said that I think he's going to leave. So,
I don't think he's going to stay.
Yeah,
you can be at a club for far too long. And if Greg Taylor feels like the underappreciated member of the squad, maybe he has a point. Maybe he's tired. Everybody speculating on when he's going to be replaced. I would be tired of it. I would, in his position, I'd be tired of that. So I get it. I get it. And he's entitled to go and try his luck somewhere else. And if his agents think he's worth X number of thousands a week, he's entitled to go and get that somewhere else. I know this fucking board's not going to pay him. That's a fact.
Yep. They're
going to be paying out anyway. There'll be a transfer fee and wages involved for whoever comes in. So, again, they could have sold Taylor last summer for £2.5-3 million at least, and they could have brought someone in. But we know that they don't tend to. Succession planning is. Succession planning was Alistair Johnson, and we'll not try that again. We'll dine off that.
But who needs to do things that way?
One interesting factor for Bayern on Tuesday is Olise against Schlupp. That they were in the training field at Crystal Palace last season. So Schlupp knows Olise. Olise knows Schlupp. So I don't know if it's a game of poker, but it's not as if Schlupp will need to be told, watch this one. He likes to turn inside. Don't let him get on your outside or he'll be flying past you. Schlupp probably knows Olise better than any of the Celtic backroom staff. So
that may also form Brendan's decision.
Yeah.
So we got to know Mr. Olise pretty well on Wednesday night.
Did we what?
His his goal was excellent. Harry Kane's was really disappointing from a defensive point of view. We should have covered that better. The guy sitting next to me thought that we showed them way too much respect, and that's why we ended up chasing the game yet again. We were missing that kind of attacking drive that we usually have, even with Dyson in the team, which I think was more than any of us could have hoped for. But I think you can see an evolution in the way Brendan wants to play. It wasn't all guns blazing and gung-ho. And hopefully, fingers crossed, come Tuesday night, we'll be saying the same, that result notwithstanding, you can see that the team is evolving and that Rodgers' style is evolving and the players are growing into it. Has he found the middle ground between being too crazy attacking and, you know, the style that some people were urging on him, which was to sit back and soak up pressure and all that? What do you think, Joe?
Yep, I would say after Dortmund away, there's a lot of people just writing it off and saying he's a fantasist, he's not changing anything. Nonsense. He changed a lot. We're probably playing about 5-10 yards deeper in Champions League ties, notwithstanding Liam Scales charging forward at Aston Villa. But generally, we're much more disciplined. The Bayern performance was probably closer to Bruges than RB Leipzig. And because it was Bruges, folk seemed to think, they're only Belgian. The only Belgian football content in Scotland just now is a bit of a banger across the city, with all respect to Arne Engels. But Bruges are a damn good football team. Bruges gave us a bit of a lesson. Bruges had an awful lot of possession and it caused a bit of frustration. But when it's Bayern Munich, your opponent...
Who did they beat in the qualifier on Wednesday there? They got a good result. They got a really good result.
Atalanta, wasn't it?
It wasn't, was it? Really?
It was, yeah. 2-1.
There you go. That's a result and a half.
Yeah.
But, no mugs, then. No mugs after all.
Never were. I wish we were as big a mug team as Bruges. Bruges have got a pretty young team, and for the last 5 or 6 years, they've always been there or thereabouts. Not going particularly far, but knocking on the door for last 16, as it used to be, and... they came through some pretty tough fixtures to get into the round of 16 playoff, and they're taking a lead over to the San Siro next week. So not too shabby at all. So not the San Siro to Atlanta, because they play in the same blue and black stripes. But Bruges are a good team, Bayern Munich are a good team, and we're getting used to playing against good teams. We're still a bit short of those good teams, but we're learning. Let's be honest, we probably expect that Celtic will be out of Europe on Wednesday morning, and we'll see what the ambitions of the club are, whether they pat themselves on the back and say, look at us, we did well, or whether they say, let's kick on, let's get two or three in, let's get two of the players required in for pre-season training next season, so that they're well settled in, rather than wait for the outcome of the Champions League playoff. And if we get through, we then get loads of money and very little time to sign players. We do actually have loads of money, but we know we're not going to touch it. Transfer fees received. That's further down the line. But we've got the basics of a pretty good team. They're a bit streetwise. And between Carter Vickers, Callum McGregor, Hatate, who's hot and cold as ever, but... These guys are in their third Champions League season. Maeda's in his third Champions League season. And you really want to build on that. Engels has come in, and Engels looks like a player that's at Champions League level. So you want to build on that. And a good way to build on that to bring in players of a similar quality and preferably earlier. We really, really, really should have a striker coming in at the end of the season, because... apparently we knew for months that Kyogo was desperate to leave. So there's a lot of questions elsewhere in the club, but on the park, the team is it's holding its own. It's standing up to some decent teams. It's been behind a lot, and it hasn't caved in other than Dortmund. So Dortmund is the outlier, thankfully. Previously, there's a few scalpings and just shrugged her shoulders and says, oh, that's it. And, oh, there's a massive gulf and we can't catch up. But there are ways to catch up. So, some domestic teams make it difficult for us and we can make it difficult for Europe Champions League teams. And when you get a wee bit of momentum, when a few things go your way, then you can upset them. But it's learning. They're getting better. There's still a lot of work to go. And we were a bit short against Bayern Munich. And I don't think there's anyone upset or angry. We're most certainly heading in the right direction. We weren't, again, think back to this time last year. The team was wavering. We were hanging on. And then we were about to get the news that Joe Hart was retiring. That seemed to galvanise things. But we don't need Joe Hart retiring to galvanise things this season. There's a treble on the go. We can hopefully put up a decent show in Munich and take something forward. So, a very different game to the D United, but there's very little to complain about. We maybe showed Bayern a little bit too much respect. That's understandable. If we'd thrown everything at them, they could have really hurt us. But it was a streetwise performance. We didn't hit the heights of Leipzig, but you don't hit the heights of Leipzig too often. So I'd say it's about a 7, 7.5, not quite an 8 out of 10 against Bayern on Wednesday. So I'll pass over to Eric if I've left any space for him.
No, you left me plenty of space. I felt that, yeah, we did show them a lot of respect, but I felt there was a game plan in place in the first half. I think that Brendan had said to the guys, we need to absorb as much as we can. And then I think the mentality he had was that we would come out and challenge them in a bit more in the second half. That if we could absorb what they threw at us in the first half and go in scoreless, then, you know, we would have had a game plan to come out in the second half to actually take it to them. And I felt that game plan was mastered up until the 45th minute when Greg Taylor was turned inside out by Michael Olise. So, and that threw a spanner in the works in terms of the game plan that we had, which was completely destroyed early in the second half when Harry Kane scored. And I texted you at the time, James, and I said, that's game over. And I meant game over as in we weren't going to win it. I wasn't discounting that we might draw it or that we might get a result, but I felt that it was game over and that we weren't going to win that game. But I felt in the second half when, and I stated that in my kind of synopsis or, you know, my write-up on the game afterwards, I felt that when Dyson Mayhead was moved into the middle, straight away he started, there was a serious threat there. I felt Byron were rattled. They were definitely rattled in the last 20 minutes of the game. And you could actually see in the last 20 minutes of the game that they could be got at, you know?
Yeah.
The atmosphere, which was a bit tepid in the first half, I think, and you were there, James. I mean, obviously, you obviously felt it go up a level and go up a few notches in the second half.
Oh God, yes.
Yeah, big time. So my point is like that. We definitely showed that they were rattled and they could be got at. Dyson going through the middle got his goal, albeit a scrappy one. And we haven't talked about that penalty decision, which to me was an absolute disgrace. You know, that was, I mean, simple fact of the matter is, while Olise might have made, or not, no, sorry, Olise, but Upamecano, am I correct? while he might have made contact with the ball, he absolutely stamped on Ernie Ingles. And, you know, we all made the point that, you know, we were always talking about Scottish officials being bad, but that was his performance as a Champions League referee.
I thought the officiating overall was dreadful.
Yeah, absolutely very poor. Dreadful. Very poor. And that, if that decision had been given, and I think there was a reason that the VAR called him back, because the VAR felt that, yeah, there's a penalty there. There is a decision has to be made. It looks like there was a stamp on Ernie Ingles. I mean, if you actually watched I watched the game back afterwards, and you can actually hear Ernie Ingles scream when the ball, when the studs go down onto his foot. So clearly the guy got hurt. The ref, I think that would have changed the complexion of the game completely. It would have been a turning point if we got that goal. That was around the 55th, wasn't it, when that happened. So, like, I think that would have changed the complexion of the game completely. that would have put us on the front foot for, you know, a good portion of the half being left. And that, you know, we'd have had 30 odd minutes to make inroads into the game. And I think we could have got a result then. I think we could have got a draw out of the game. I think when Dyson scored in the 78th, it was just it was too little, too late. We just didn't have the time to get another one. Yeah, albeit, you know, I mean, that shot that Alistair Johnston had in the you know, he was unlucky there. I mean, but Neuer was up for it. But we, you know, we did rattle them, and the crowd got behind us. And I just think it was too little, too late, in that our game plan was destroyed in the 45th and 47th minutes, which was very disappointing because the timing, it was sucker punch timing in both instances. And like you said, the Harry Kane goal, that was very disappointing to me.
We have to do this to ourselves.
Yeah, but how can you leave a player like him unmarked?
There's no reason to go early in the game. We'll lose one just before halftime, and then one right after the restart. Oh,
yeah. But how can you leave a guy like him unmarked? You just it's criminal. Crazy. It's absolutely criminal at that level to leave him unmarked. So
absolutely. Look,
we got our just rewards for leaving him unmarked, and there was no way he was going to miss that, and he didn't.
Just a lack of concentration. Second half's just started. You need to be
Oh yeah, the head needs to be in the zone. Yeah, 100%. And you know, there was 3 Bayern supporters at our supporters club, believe it or not, for the game. And they were very quiet in the first minute anyway. I can tell you that much. One of them even had their head in their hands. Look, the call was fair. You know, Ida was offside. There was nothing.
It was close.
It was close. But I mean, when the lines were drawn, it was pretty obvious that he was offside. But yeah, it was a hard one to swallow. It was like, for me, it was like one of those movies that you watch that has massive potential and really builds up to a crescendo at the end and then just lets you down completely. You know what I mean? And that's kind of what it felt like to me. But I mean, I know when Dyson scored, every fiber of my being was saying, in my own mind, just please let it be one of those nights. Just please let it be one of those nights that goes against the fucking norm of this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Let us get an equalizer. Let us really push them at the end, you know, and it just wasn't to be, unfortunately.
Yes, indeed. Joe, you said something interesting about the number of players who are now on, what, the third Champions League campaign. This is always my big fear, right, that when it comes time to sell, that the next player to go will be one of the experienced players, and you will lose that little bit, that cool head in a crazy situation. That's my fear for the summer. That's my real fear for the summer. It's not even that the club won't push the boat out and go and sign the players that we need. I see a scenario where we're starting the Champions League qualifiers where negotiations gone on in the background to sell someone first. Because I don't want to be in a downer about this on a permanent basis, but how many times have we seen this now? How many times have we seen this? I can't remember the last transfer window where we actually spent more money than we brought in. And it always seems to be that we have to sell before we buy. And if that's the case, then I don't know how ready for the Champions League qualifiers we're going to be.
You see the same happening again this summer.
And it'll be somebody experienced, though. It'll be somebody who should be one of the wise old heads for all the young guys who are in maybe their first or second Champions League campaigns, to say this is how you handle it at this level. And I think that's one of the things that's held us back for a long time, is that whenever a player has been in the team 2 years and he's just getting that experience, that he's the one who gets sold. It's frustrating. It's really frustrating. I hope that doesn't happen this time. I wrote a piece the other day called No Step Back, which was basically that should be Rodgers' policy when dealing with the board this summer. That we don't sell anybody. That we don't sell a single key player. These guys have took us to this point up until now. If we add to the squad rather than subtracting from it, we can take the next step. And that's how we should do it. But always the worry is there that we won't.
I wrote a piece on it too, James, during the week, you know, about about the interest from Newcastle United and Nicholas Kuhn.
And
the fact that, he's in the shop window now. There's interest there. There's also going to be interest in Dyson.
There's always going to be interest. You don't have to respond.
But the problem is, like I said, I'm starting to dread the summer more now in the thoughts that it's going to be the same thing. We all knew inevitably it was going to be Matt O'Reilly last summer. We were mentally prepared for that, but at this moment in time, you know, it's we don't know for sure if it's it, the problem is there's guys who are really performing very well and they're putting themselves in the shop window, and that's, you know, Celtic are reported, and I don't believe that anyway, that they're reported to name their price, you know,
$20 million.
That's just speculation. I mean, if you've got concrete interest from somebody like Newcastle United, then slap a price tag of $30 million on it, because they can well afford it with the amount of backing that they have from the Saudis. You know, so don't be going, yeah, $20 million to prize him away from the club. That to me is that's bullshit.
For a guy like Nicholas Kuhn, I don't even think you do name a price. You just let clubs make up numbers and throw as big a number as they can think of at you.
Exactly.
And we all know if we get an offer that's absolutely like ludicrous, like a Jota style £25 million bid comes
out.
You have to take that. There's no way you can turn that down. Right. And so we know that there is a magic number beyond which it would be insane to resist. Right. But Rodgers has to be very clear that we have got a real opportunity to build something good here if we keep the stones, the foundation stones in place. Can he just be reactive and go and look to turn the next transfer window into, well, can we turn the profit from this one? Shouldn't it be about that? Team sheet has to take precedence over the balance sheet at some point, you would think. Joe, I can see you don't believe that that's ever going to happen.
No. Well, first up, big shout out for Michael Nicholson. Last January, we spent more money than we did, than we received in transfers. No one was sold last January.
We
spent £3.5 million on Nicholas Kuhn and got Adam Ida in.
Michael, I apologise.
As we all know, the only two good transfer windows in the last 10, 20, however many you like, were under Ange Postecoglou, when Frank Tremblay was holding Michael Nicholson's hand and pushing his signature on all those cheques.
Even then, the books balanced at the end of the season.
Yeah, Ayer had to be sold before Starfelt came in, etc. And then Edward was sold, and then the final day we got Giakoumakis and Jota and Carter Vickers on loan. Thank goodness we should have an annual holiday that 31st of August. That paved the way for a hell of a lot. You should be talking this way, but
one of the only final days of the transfer window that was worth the wait, that I can genuinely point to and say that is what made the difference. Those three signings are the ones that made the difference.
Cost Dan McKay his job.
The reason we won the league.
It cost Dan McKay his job because his transfer negotiations weren't great with Joseph Juranovic and who was the other player? Juranovic and was it? Giakoumakis, I think it was. But anyway, it was Dan McKay who was signing the checks then, and then Mikey Nicholson appeared, you know, and just has been the invisible man ever since.
If it wasn't for Ange and his agent, none of that would have happened. But the positive, and it's a strange positive, is Brendan Rodgers hasn't signed a contract, and we know that the aims of Brendan Rodgers and the aims of Michael Nicholson and Peter Lowe are not exactly the same. Some might say they're quite different. Exactly. So, depends how much pressure Dermot Desmond is putting on the Celtic board to get Brendan onto a new deal. Brendan will know it's not particularly his own personal finances that he'll be negotiating. He'll be negotiating for Celtic's level of ambition. And if Celtic come up with a couple of early signings of good quality players, then there should be a better chance that Brendan Rodgers says, yep, after all, it's been a fraught couple of years, but I think I've finally got you around to my way of thinking, but We went to America with no outfield signings. We took the two goalkeepers replacing Joe Hart, and then we finally got the loan deals converted to permanents on Bernardo and Ida. Then we signed three on deadline day, and we brought in Vary the week before. After that staged incident at St Mirren where Peter Lill was confronted by a fan. So it's going to be interesting. That it's more than just transfer business in the summer. It's the future of the manager. It's a level of ambition for the club. Let's see. That glass is actually half full, half empty. we'll see how it is later on, but we've got no reason to be confident the Celtic board. Perhaps will surprise us and we'll be ready. It's only one Champions League. It's a Champions League playoff. Should we win the league? Should we hold off the challenge from Phil Clement's exciting young side? I think those games are 20th and 27th of August. So there's a couple of league games to be bedded in. There's pre-season games to be bedded in. We really should have a settled team for those matches.
Was it you who published the teams? The provisional
there's one site on Twitter, and it's the highest ranked team is Slovan Bratislava, the champions are Slovakia, and then it's Switzerland. I'm trying to think who else. The lowest ranked champions would be Sturm Graz. That's a strange one because Austrian sides have done reasonably well. But,
yeah, they have, yeah.
There's a bit of a much of a muchness between the seeded and non-seeded, but I'll always take being in the seeded side of it. So it's two matches, one round, two legs, 20th, 27th of August.
It looks manageable right now, but you,
yeah,
and the way you have put your little Debbie Dampener on it when you said that there will be teams who aren't in that round yet who will qualify from the other round.
Yeah,
might be worth watching.
There could be a good team that's really.
I'm not feeling quite as safe as I might be, but yeah, we're in the Champions section. We'll be in the Champions section, so the challenge shouldn't be that complicated. It should be a reasonably straightforward tie. The kind of ties that if we'd have got them in this Champions League group, we would have been confident of winning. So I don't see. I don't want to say too much too early, but yeah, it should be a reasonably straightforward exercise. It looks like it will be a reasonably straightforward exercise.
Well, no, that's like, I mean,
we can still shoot ourselves in the foot, of course. We all know.
Yeah, but I mean, Phil Clement's exciting young team could eat into our lead, and you know they might miraculously win the league. That could happen too, you know.
Conceivably, it's possible.
And pigs might fly, but you know,
it's possible. It's like that line from JFK where they're talking about theoretical physics. And he says, in theoretical physics, an elephant can hang off the edge of a cliff with its tail tied to a daisy, according to theoretical physics. But use your eyes and your common sense, and it's ridiculous. That's what they're winning the league seems a bit like to me. I think the elephants get more chance. Speaking of which, they played their latest game today. And I put up a piece about it afterwards. I thought they were terrible. I thought they were very lucky that Lauren Shankman hasn't had his shooting boots on for the whole season. That boy who plays at wide for Hearts was excellent. He absolutely ripped them to pieces. But he didn't have his shooting boots on either. Other than that, Hearts, I think, would have won that game quite comfortably. And what it reminded me of, especially looking at the forums after it and seeing what their fans thought of the game, as I was reminded of Easter Road, season 2021, when Diego Laxalt scored the late equaliser after we'd been 2-0 down against Hibs. And I think, I don't know if everybody had the same sinking feeling at that point in the season that the Lennon experiment had failed and failed utterly and that we needed to bring that to a swift close. And I remember that day sitting with the family watching it and Lax Elk's ball hitting the back of the net and just being absolutely sick and just being like, no. Now Lennon's going to go on after this game and he's going to talk about how well we fought back and how and it'll paper over the cracks, and we're just waiting for the next disaster, because we'd already been annihilated by Sparta Prague at home no long before. That was a game where he chucked the players under the bus, and it was blamed everybody but himself. And I thought that day, we're heading for an absolute disaster here. And of course, a few days later, we went to Prague, got beat 4-1 again. 2 days or 3 days after that, Ross County knocked us out of the League Cup, Celtic Park, which sparked the fan protests. It was February before that matter came here, and the board finally acted. But their fans must feel a bit like that today. Well, they must have been going into that game thinking, right, a defeat, and maybe this is over. I mean, if it wasn't over last weekend, I don't know why they were hoping for that. But a defeat, and maybe this is over. And at the end of the game, coming out on their supporters' buses or their cars or whatever, they had to listen to Clement talking the same nonsense. Same absolute nonsense. All over again. About how it was a really good performance and how the fans were behind the team and how everybody, how he enjoyed watching it. I think, and even Chris Boyd said, I sometimes think he's watching a different game than we are. And that's how completely divorced from reality his comments were. But on paper, it's a big win at a tough venue. And that's what he's clinging to. And that's what Patrick Stewart and the board will cling to in order to justify keeping him in place for another week. And maybe a week after that. And it just doesn't look like it has an end. And they must feel a bit like I felt that day watching that, thinking, oh man, how much longer do we have to do this? And that's a horrible thing for a fan to be thinking, that you don't want your team to win, that you just want Martyrs to come to your close, that you just want the disaster to happen already so you can get it over with and move on. And that's where they are right now. And it must be terrible. I was on their forums looking at their comments, and they are so, so, so despondent. It's like, this will never end. And as I said at the end of the piece, I will never get tired drinking down their pain. It's great. It's wonderful. Don't anybody thinking I'm going on there and feeling the slightest shred of something. I go on there for my pleasure and my own amusement.
Joe, it's almost like it's almost like they're in a sort of purgatory at the moment, because I mean it's, the season is over effectively. And the only hope that they've got left is that Clement goes. There's nothing to play for, so going to Tynecastle today and winning 3-1, it's meaningless. That's it. It's friendlies for the rest of the season, so it's a meaningless result at the end of the day. And that's, as a fan, I agree exactly or 100% with what you said. I distinctly remember that game against. I was actually. The game against Hibs, I was actually gutted that Diego Laxalt got that equaliser. And that's how they must be feeling. I actually went, oh no, because Lennon's going to come out and do exactly what you said he'd do, James. That was very much how I felt at that time. And you're right in what you're saying. They are definitely feeling that kind of pain at the moment, in that they know every win is a stay of execution for him.
Yep.
It's just going to continue this death of a thousand cuts that they're going through. And that's what it is.
Last week, right, and we all, I think all of us expected to get the text message or to get whatever, the news alert on the phone, like any minute. I mean, I was checking my phone a couple of times during the podcast, and you guys were like, is that it? Is he done? I'm like, no. he's still here.
Well, James,
I am astounded that a week later, he's still here.
What did I say in the last podcast? I it's on record where I said he won't be gone. He won't go. You were convinced he would be gone. He's not gone.
I didn't see how he could survive it. It's a genuinely an unsurvivable result, and he has. And a week later, he's still there. And he's still sitting in front of the media talking the same nonsense.
He survived those results about 4 or 5 times this season. He lost at Kilmarnock, he lost at Aberdeen. Before the our New Year disaster, they lost at St Mirren and drew to Motherwell. And after beating us, they drew with Dundee and Hibs. But he's now telling you that the last couple of months, the performances and results have absolutely been fantastic. And no one picks him up, no one drills him down.
Is he now bulletproof?
Oh, yeah. If you can get by losing at home to Queen's Park, losing at Kilmarnock, I think they've got a midweek game at Kilmarnock, or losing to Celtic at Celtic Park, that's not going to lose him his job. But it's a bit of a war of attrition. He's probably got his agent saying, for God's sake, find me something, find me anything, because he can't be enjoying it. I mean, after every match, he comes up with the same script. I mean, if you were to compare what he said after today's game, it'd be very similar to the United match a couple of weeks ago. Two back-to-back, 3-1 victories, all is good. Just that one blip.
It was like that today.
So he's not going. I didn't think he's. I thought there might be some pressure from fan media in midweek. That would have went absolutely toxic and over the top, but that was all pretty tame. So there was no chance. But we said last week, they can't afford to buy Lyle Cameron. They certainly can't afford to sack a manager. So he's there until his agent can find him something better, and then they can shake hands and move on. They don't have a competitive domestic match until August, so
that's true.
It's a long time. It's a long wait, and not much is going to change. And as you laughed out there, the fan media reaction was pretty tame. Some individuals keep going about, "Oh, this is the worst result ever." There's been tons of worse results in the last 10 years. Al have battered them. Motherwell beat them 6-1 in aggregate in a playoff.
They did, mate. They did.
Annan and Peterhead have won at Ibrox. Raith Rovers won a Scottish Cup tie at Ibrox 11 years ago. Albion Rovers were denied a victory by John Beaton. There's been tons of results. They've lost cup ties to Queen of the South, to Forfar. The SFA gave them a Scottish Cup semi-final at home to try and get them through to that first trophy. Then D United won 3-1 at Ibrox. Everybody knows the goal scorers, Mackay, Stephen, Armstrong and Sifse. There's been tons of bad results, but the only social media victim, this is terrible, this is the worst ever, I don't deserve this, this is a nightmare, everybody's got to go, the parts have got to go, somebody's got to buy the parts, blah, blah, blah. They're absolutely clueless, and it's a month till the Glasgow Derby. I would expect Clermont to be in charge for that. If they lose that game, they'll have the same excuses as they had in September about how close they were. And it'll refer back to back away victories at Dundee United and Hearts as proof that things are getting better. Clinton and Cialis on the verge of a call-up for the French international squad. Now that Jeffrey's been rumbled, now that Igamani's went 5 or 6 games to score a goal. So it's just going to rumble on. I doubt there's anyone that really expects Clermont to be gone before March the 16th at Celtic Park. So sit back and enjoy Chris Boyd's pain and the rest of their pain, because there's nothing decisive happening. We lost to Inverness Cali Thistle. John Barnes was gone. There was quite a few estimates. We almost got Goose Hiddink. I think Dermot Desmond put his foot down in that. He brought in Martin O'Neill and things changed completely. They are not going to see anything like that. They'll limp on, and they're all just hiding from making the obvious decision. So
that's a question, right? There's a question. He'll limp on till when?
Till he gets another job elsewhere.
I cannot even use my not inconsiderable imagination to picture a scenario where he's in the dugout at the start of next season. My brain just will not go there at all. I cannot imagine it happening under any circumstances. But if they're going to do it, how long did they leave it? You would think that it made sense to bring someone in before this season ends. Give the guy a free run of games to assess the squad, whatever else it is.
And by what? There's no money there.
They have to do something before they send out season ticket renewals.
No.
Because even a 10% drop is disastrous for them.
Yeah, on a financial level.
disastrous.
James, even if Clement goes, what are the options? They've burnt their bridges with so many managers.
They have. I think they're in trouble.
Any manager that's
succession going to plan, this, we, their succession plan is going to be very fucking difficult, no matter.
But any manager that's going to look at this, any manager potentially that could be touted for the job, right? Let's just say, for argument's sake, they go after what's his name, the guy out in China. Can't think of his name right now.
Kevin Muscat.
Yeah. So let's just say they go after Muscat, right?
Get Kevin Muscat in the first place. Yeah. His club is not going to part company with him for free.
But he's already earning. I did an article on it there during the week. He's earning something like 1.6 million a year. So he's on similar to what Clement is on at the moment, right?
Yeah.
So per annum. So let's just say that they bring him in. What's he going to do? Like, he doesn't have a transfer kitty. He doesn't have funds to buy players. He's going to inherit the same squad that Clement had. He might get a couple of loans in at the start.
A squad that needs to be cut significantly if they're going to balance
the books. Yeah. And then, so we just say, I would say it right at this moment in time, that Kevin Muscat is the best option available for them, right? What's the next option available after that? A few Rangers men, yeah?
Some guy who's been sacked for 4 or 5 English championship teams, maybe.
Yeah, or like you said, McInnes, or then the dream team of, you know, Baza Ferguson and, you know, John Brown and Keith Ballacray in there as well. Like, I mean, that's the dream team, the real Rangers men. You know what I mean? So, this is it. They've exhausted every avenue. Unless they go out there and they pick some complete unknown, like, you know, and hit it lucky like we did with Ange Postecoglou. But that was, Ange Postecoglou wasn't a complete unknown in the hemisphere that he came from. He was a serial winner where he had come from. So they're like, what serial winner are they going to pluck out of somewhere, you know, that's completely unknown or unknown to their fans and our fans in Scotland at the moment? I just don't see what options they have available to them. So I think it's at a point where the board realizes that they realize we just have shag all options available to us. And we have to stick with this guy for as long as we can. And then, you know, unless results get completely chronic in that we give them an unmerciful tanking at Celtic Park next month, and then things just go pear-shaped after that, and it's just a matter of time then. But if you don't lose your job after a result like last week against Queen's Park, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. And obviously, like you, I'm absolutely loving the pain of the fans. I mean, it's just brilliant at the moment. But I also can empathize in that I understand exactly what they're going through. And that goes back to what you just said earlier on about the Hibs game a couple of years back, you know?
That's what makes it so sweet. Because I remember how bad it felt. I think to myself, they're going through that right now. Like, yeah, it's good.
Constantly, month after month, season after season.
It's just like they're just stuck in purgatory. Because the old club died. The new club started and tried to be what the old club was and has gradually just self-flagellated over the last 13 years. That's literally what it's done, self-flagellated.
At some point, we are going to cover that subject in great detail.
Yes, definitely we are.
In great detail.
They have completely self-destructed.
I'm going to be writing about it all this week anyway. I'm going to be covering
it. Self-destructed in their attempt to emulate what went before them.
Yeah.
You know?
But they've made a fundamental miscalculation. And that what went before never existed anyway.
Exactly.
Outside
that's
bank that couldn't say no to David Murray. And EBTs and whatever else.
Mr. Masterton,
The whole club was a phantom in the first place.
Built on foundations of sound.
And they're chasing something that was never... They're chasing a unicorn. They're chasing something that was never real in the first place. And they don't get it. And they still don't get it. And it just will not compute. No matter how many times you say it to them. No matter how many different ways you think to say it, it doesn't compute.
Yep. This club was built on success. No, it wasn't.
Captain disappointed is living proof of that. You can get away with murder.
Yeah.
Yeah. Captain with three trophies to his name hanging up there in the Hall of Fame. Brilliant. Great. That's why their Wall of Champions has Steven Gerrard on the front of it. His single title. Yeah, anyway, guys, last subject before we close this one down, and I'll keep it really brief. Tuesday night in Munich. Eric, how's it going to go?
As much as I'd love to be a dreamer and say that we're going to go out there and we're going to win 2-0 and we're going to cause the biggest upset in the Champions League in years.
I think I'm terrible, though.
You know, I love it. Like I felt on Wednesday night when I just had that feeling in me when the crowd was behind them and they were coming out of Bayern Munich and I thought, just do it, let's do it, you know. I'd love to be chasing, but I think like you said earlier on, I'm chasing unicorns. I think being a realist, take the fantasist out of it and the dreamer out of it. Being a realist, if we can come out of there with a 2-0, a 2-1 respectable scoreline, I'd be quite happy with that. The problem is that if the floodgates open early, we could be in trouble. And that's what we need to avoid. And it's like deja vu here, sitting here and saying that same thing over and over again. We can't concede the early goal.
I repeat a Dortmund and everybody's going to say we're back to square one. We haven't evolved. We haven't learned anything.
I think
all the lessons are for nothing.
Yeah, I think we have to be realistic here and set it as damage limitation. But the other side of it is, okay, and I'll keep this brief. I won't go on too long because we're over time. But the other side of this is, Brendan needs to say to the guys in the post-match or in the pre-match talk, he needs to say to them, look, guys, we've nothing to lose here. You know, we gave them a game in the first leg. We're on their home patch now. We're expected to lose this game. Go out there and just express yourselves. Be yourselves. Be the best that you can be on this night and do the club proud. And the shackles are off. Just let them express themselves. Okay, he's a pragmatic manager now. We know that in Europe. So he may say that, but he may also have a game plan and to say, look, we'll have to try and keep them at bay for the first 15, 20. But if we do, and it's still nil all by the 15th or the 20th minute, then look, go out there and express yourselves because you've got nothing to lose. Give it a go. Just give it a go and see what you can get out of it. I think that's realistically all they can do. What about you, Joe?
A little bit of that, but it's a funny one because, as I said earlier, Bayern have come through two very tough away matches in a week. They've got a game on Tuesday night that they don't need to win. So, as we've seen, if you don't start a game at full pelt, it can be hard to get into it later on. You can't pick it up. So I just hope that we keep it at nothing each for as long as... If it's nothing each at half-time, I'll be absolutely delighted. Got to keep them out for as long as possible, and then there's a little bit of doubt in their part. And without doubt, we've got players that can hurt them. Kuhn and Maeda are well capable. Whether Maeda's centre-forward or left-wing, he's capable of hurting them. They get a little bit of a warning in the last 20 minutes, half hour at Celtic Park. So I think it's all important to keep them out as long as possible. If we can do that, then they start to get into two minds. They might not be pushing it too much because they're leading 2-1 anyway, and they'll probably fancy their chances of scoring a goal at some point. So I think be fairly cautious going into the game. There's nothing to be gained flying at them from the whistle. Try and settle in. If they score, that's life. Just stick at it. So there's not too much grounds for optimism, but it's not a write-off. And we've had nine good European matches so far this season. I'll include Dortmund in that because we bounced back pretty spectacularly. No one was expecting us to get a clean sheet in Atlanta. Most folk are taking a 2 or 3-0, just avoid 5, 6, or 7. So the Dortmund game might have been the game that we learned most from. So we've had 9 good matches. Hopefully we can make it a 10th good match. I don't expect her involvement to progress much further, but there's a decent shout that we can make it awkward for them and cause them some problems. They're not, hopefully they're not going to skate through it in second gear. So that's a glass half empty perspective of it. You never quite know, but 10 Champions League matches, 10 decent Champions League matches is fantastic. And hopefully we strengthen in the summer and come back next season in better shape. We will be pop four next year. It doesn't really matter now, as we know. We'll have two pop four teams, two pop three teams that we should be able to look at after this season's exploits and say, we'll take something from them. We should be winning the bulk of our home matches.
Absolutely.
So that's the direction we're going in. If we call an emergency podcast on Tuesday night or Wednesday, I'll be delighted and I'll be shocked. So back to you, James, to round it off and sign us off for this week.
Yep. I want to thank everybody for subscribing last week and everybody who watched the show and shared the show and talked about
support
the show.
Support was huge last week.
We got some traction somewhere. Maybe it was the subject matter, I don't know. But anyway, yes, thanks very much for that, guys. And keep on doing what you're doing. Follow us on Spotify, follow us on YouTube, and especially the guys on Spotify, because I know a lot of you do listen to Spotify. To my big mate, Johnny, this is how I'm going to know if you've listened to a full episode. And I know sometimes
you get the video content on Spotify now as well.
That's good. Well, anyway, guys, thank you very much for joining us again this week. And to my colleagues, Eric, and to my man, Joe, I will see you guys on the next one.
Cheers.
Thanks, James. Talk to you later. Take it easy. Bye-bye.